You are listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. Join him as he and his guests discover how businesses thrive in California.
Well, welcome to The Pilgrim on the 405 on this bright sunny afternoon in Southern California. We have a great conversation today with Sky Cassidy, the CEO of Mountaintop Data in LA and the host of If You Market podcast. So welcome, Sky.
Hey, thanks for having me on, Will. Great to be here.
You're familiar with the 405, I take it.
Before the whole COVID thing, all too familiar with the 405. Yeah. I don't know if I've touched it except for once or twice in the last year.
Well, you're one of the people who are going to get back on and clog it back up again. I can tell.
Well, actually, maybe not. My whole company has gone remote as of now. We'll see what happens as things open back up.
So 3,000 people remote. Now working from home, right?
Yep, all 3,000 of us. Unless you look on LinkedIn and see how many we really got, then it'll be slightly less.
Well, we buy the data from you and know exactly what's going on, right?
Yeah. We're not exactly filling up the 405 ourselves, but we can help.
All right. So tell me what Mountaintop Data does for companies.
So we're a data company, and by that, there's a lot of different kinds of data. We provide business-to-business contact information for direct sales and marketing campaigns. Traditionally lists, phone numbers, email addresses, physical address for direct business marketing. We do a lot of other services now as well, appending of information, cleaning of data, email campaign management, and whatnot.
Well, now, I for years have used Zoom Info.
Yep. So yeah, we would be a very equal to them in the type of services we have.
Zoom Info's, I've treated it like a Rolodex. Can make save lists of people. I can search out. So that's been very helpful to me. Now, one of my very good friends who's moving to Denver, it's a commercial real estate broker. So we're looking at how we can find new data for him in Denver. And in the process of that, we agreed that Zoom Info was good, but Zoom Info is a fairly static database, right?
Yeah. I mean, I would imagine they're always adding data.
Yeah, but I mean,
in the last couple of years, generally through just acquiring other companies and integrating their data, they've gobbled up most companies in the industry.
And this last case, be gobbled up by discover.org. Right.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I guess they got gobbled up and then changed the name to, to maintain the Zoom Info brand.
Right. So in the process of this, I discovered this thing called seamless.ai. Are you familiar?
They're another. If I had to name off five legitimate U.S. data companies, they'd be one of them I'd put in there, I think.
But they seem to be fairly dynamic with the artificial intelligence, because when I ask for Sky Cassidy, it's going out and picking up the absolute latest data.
Yeah, that's a good point. There's really two kinds of data companies right now when it comes to the type of data that we do. There's the companies that have a static database like Zoom Info, like ourselves. And then there's the companies that they don't really have and maintain a database. They just live build. So they'll go and take your criteria and run it on LinkedIn and several other sites and pull that information together. Typically they'll use they're not as good in many respects because the data isn't specifically verified, and things like emails are either not available or made up on the spot. So they'll just do a lazy append where they'll take a known convention, if there is one, and create an email and check if it doesn't bounce, if they just ping the server, which almost no emails do these days, and then say, here's, and those you'll usually see, they won't say, here's the email. They'll say, this might be the email for you.
Seamless gives you six or eight possibilities and ranks them by percentages.
Yeah. So they're live building like that. And then there's, we have an internal database, so we're static. We're constantly adding and removing data, but we are looking at adding a live build element to our system so that, you know, one of the complaints people have when they use our system is they search for a contact and they say, hey, how come I can't find the contact I'm looking for?
Mm-hmm.
And we say, well, you can't, you know, we're not really designed for you to search for one person. We're not going to always have the one person you're looking for. Those kind of live databases are a little better because as long as the person has a footprint online, they'll find something usually.
Right, right.
Making a hybrid of those two is probably the ideal situation.
Yeah.
As much information as possible. We're really designed for the, I don't know if I call it old school, but the type of bulk marketing where you're getting a marketing database and then you're marketing to it.
Right.
But there are so many tools these days that are doing marketing automation live and feeding information in. And so as we integrate into those, yeah, we'll look to have some sort of a partial information, live information feed. Right now, if we don't have complete information on the contact, we don't even make it available.
Yeah.
They may have all the information, but the email or but the phone number, and it won't be in the system unless it's complete. So yeah, you're right. Not getting as wide of a coverage. All the data companies have their own little niche they're good at. I mean, some of them are bad at everything, but the good ones have their own kind of specific niche that they're particularly good at. I wouldn't say one is necessarily better than the other, but for an individual client, it might be better.
Right. Well, what I really appreciate is the ability to import directly. I use outreach.ai as my marketing platform. Mm-hmm. And to be able to go into Zoom Info, and simply say, I want that one. I want that one. I want that one. And boom, it's imported and I can start a sequence going out to those folks, a sequence of emails going out to those folks. And same thing with seamless.ai. I mean, it's that integration that's just so magic. The ability to integrate and move.
What you're talking to, I think most marketers have that same feeling. And it's bizarre. It's been coming up a lot recently, and it really ties into what we do as a company. It's actually kind of the core of the marketing or the manifesto that I've written up for the company on what our, you know, what our purpose is. And just for people to know, our purpose isn't saving animals or anything like that. Our purpose is our customers, but it's what we're going to do with data and to the data world. And when you look at your experience there, just to go in the way back machine here a little bit, when I went to college, I studied photography. And I was graduating right about the time digital was coming in. And I was looking at the people coming in behind me, and they were starting to have digital and be trained on digital. And I was in the dark room with chemicals, having to learn all this stuff. And I was briefly upset, feeling like I was basically had gone through all these courses to learn all these skills that were going to be obsolete very soon. And that these new kids with their digital stuff didn't know what they were really doing, and they weren't really photographers. And then I realized, luckily, very quickly, once I got over my pity party, that the photography is not knowing the chemistry and stuff. That is an unnecessary technical part of the skill. And if that is all you know, then you aren't a photographer. You're a chemist. You're the logistics of it, kind of, and you will get phased out by technology. I was very proud of my ability to focus and take multiple pictures on a moving person in a sports game as action was happening. Anybody can do that now, holding down a button on their iPhone, you know?
Right. That's what's amazing to me. I mean, I have back over here on the floor, I have the video camera that I bought, I don't know how many years ago, but it was amazing, you know, and it had this little tape in it that you could import into a computer, but I mean, it's worthless now. I mean, it's been sitting there.
Yeah.
And it's like, what do I do with this? And then on the bottom of it, I've got my Nikon digital camera, but nevertheless, I don't get as good a quality of that as I do right now with my iPhone 12. I mean, it's amazing. Just amazing.
I have old digital cameras that I used to shoot weddings with. And if I was to shoot a wedding today and had the option, I would choose my iPhone over it in a heartbeat. It would just take better pictures automatically, maybe some lighting situations, but the technology. So basically what I saw was, you don't want the technology to replace you. If your skill is the technology, then that is an ever changing field. A photographer's skill is not the technology. That's something they have to learn to be able to do the actual job. Same with marketers. Knowing Excel, if you're the only marketer in your company that knows Excel, you're invaluable. They cannot get rid of you. If you know how to run, you know, a pivot table and an X lookup, and or you can Google it and figure it out, then you are the head of marketing in your company.
Right.
But that shouldn't be necessary. And that's kind of the manifesto for our company that I worked out with Data was, you know, our goal is when you talk about those integrations, marketers should be able to just market and not have to be data experts and data scientists and Excel experts and CRM experts and all that stuff. And I think we had someone on the podcast, the If You Market podcast one time that was in the marketing operations department. And I don't know if I told them this or if I just thought about it and thought better. But I said, you know, part of our job, my company, what we want to do is remove their job. Marketing operations should be automatic.
Right.
Basically,
right.
They're the people who know the dark room, and it's necessary right now because we're still working in chemicals and whatnot, but it should be automatic. You shouldn't have to make reports in an Excel spreadsheet and transfer data from one spot to the next. And very soon you won't. The data feeding, I won't say the name here because we haven't trademarked it and copyrighted it and whatnot yet, but you know, we have a product we're working on that's basically going to wrap all that stuff up into one product where it's just your data is in your system where you want it, when you want it, live. So you're saying, you know, they run the live search, or they run the search, it goes out and pulls the information. We're saying, okay, well, we're going to be doing that, but if you have specific target audience, when that changes, it's just going to get pushed into your, I think you said
outreach.io. Yeah. AI. Yeah.
Yeah. IO AI. It could be either or both. I can't remember either, but yeah, I know the program, it just pushes automatically into that, into your sequences. And that's kind of how it should be. Yeah. And then as a marketer, you can focus on the wording you're using, the branding, the approach, the actual marketing.
Let's talk about what marketing is about. I mean, 10 years ago when I was, for 18 years, I was a Sandler trainer. And so I would train salespeople. And I said to them, you know, be very careful about the difference between sales and marketing, and get really clear about what marketing's job is. Because when I would walk into my best friend's marketing companies, all along the wall, they would have be displaying all of their awards. Right. And it's like, you know, this is what we're about, is all these awards. And it's like, wait a minute, I don't know who you're working with, but when you work with a sales team, the way you're evaluated is how many qualified leads did you bring them today? And so getting really clear that our job as a marketer is to produce leads, qualified leads, right?
Right.
Now, it's not just to, and I think this is what I have learned in the last 12 months. Marketing's job is not just to provide qualified leads. It is to provide people who want to have conversations.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, hopefully that's what sales qualifies, but it's interesting. I just had a conversation with somebody yesterday for my podcast, If You Market podcast, and the concept they were talking about that we're going to be doing an episode on. And by the way, I'm not a marketing expert. I started out in sales. I'm one of the founders. I worked in sales, eventually trying to manage and build a sales team. I looked at it and said, it's the problem isn't here. It's farther up the pipeline. And so I basically kept clawing up the pipeline farther and farther, and I ended up in marketing, and then I ended up taking over the company. But I went too far up the pipeline.
Oops.
This concept.
No, I really like making cookies. Now you want me to think about payroll. Whoa.
So this, I had always said to my people, even though I pulled myself up into marketing, but I did it because sales needed it. And my philosophy on the marketing was always that marketing works for sales, and different companies have different structures. And some companies sales works for and reports to marketing. I don't know how that works, but apparently it does in some companies, and some companies they're equal. So they just end up fighting with each other all the time. Yeah. But I'd always believed that marketing works for sales. And this guy's coming on our podcast, and he had an even, you know, more solidified version of this concept, where he said, not only does marketing work for sales, but marketing doesn't have a customer outside the company. Their customer is sales. And basically they need to provide a product to sales, find out what sales wants. Sales will let them know what it needs to, you know, what they need to know. Maybe you're still doing market research, reaching out to the clients, some and whatnot, but really you just go to sales and say, I work for you. What do you want? How can I, and maybe you have some ideas to present and to say, here's what I think we can do. Is this good? Yeah. How would you like it adjusted? Hey, I don't want to just provide leads. Can I do some branding also? And here's why it'll be good for you. But it's basically like, that's your client.
Yeah. And what I'm discovering is that what I discovered in the last 12 months with this lack of ability to walk into a room with 30 people and you know, hand out cards and have a drink of wine and smile and hope that you find somebody who's going to either refer you to somebody or buy something from you. Without that, then, you know, you've got this huge world out there that's represented by your database, by LinkedIn database, but who do you, without a conversation, you're not doing anything. And so
it's almost like the sales and marketing landscape. We were living in the real world and now we've been told like, sorry, but people aren't in the real world. Now they're in the matrix. You got to go in there and talk to them.
Yes. But once you go global, you are in touch with everybody who's online.
Yeah, there's a big benefit to it.
Well, it's a benefit, but at the same time, what you're looking for is somebody who is willing to have a conversation with you.
It'll be interesting to see what happens when we go back to in-person events being open and whatnot, because when everybody's online, it kind of levels the playing field a bit for people who couldn't afford to go do all the in-person stuff.
Because really important is this ability to look for people who want conversations.
Right.
And I mean, it's certainly a demographic qualification. I mean, where are they? What size are they? You know, geographic qualification, but this psychological qualification is really, do they want to talk?
Yeah. And that's probably what they're using there as intent data, which is kind of the big thing right now in data, as it should be. It's basically saying they're looking at all kinds of signals that people are putting out, typically online. You know, are they searching for certain things, downloading certain white papers, signing up for certain webinars, going to certain events, all this kind of indicators that they're going to be interested, you know, looking at certain websites, competitor websites maybe, and that tells people, hey, these people look like they're interested in this specific thing, and then they'd be popping up for you as, you know, out of all your targets, this person is much more likely to be thinking about this right now.
So who has access to that data?
There's a handful of companies out there. The biggest one is Bombora. Then you're going to have companies like LeadSift, Intent.io. There's quite a few. And some of them have the same information. Maybe they have the same source and they're chopping it up and packaging it, reselling others, kind of the same way, you know, we are with data. We're an original source of data. There's a handful of other original sources. And there's a lot of resellers. Same with the intent data. But there's a handful of original sources out there. Sometimes the people who package it up, it's actually better, because how to consume that, you know, you're saying the outreach IO might be better than their source is probably Bombora or LeadSift or Intent, Intently or one of these other intent data companies, but they are actually executing it for you. So they're crossing referencing it with the data in your system to tell you of all your contacts you're pursuing, here's the ones that are likely interested at the moment. So, you know, if you're going to make 50 calls today, make these 50 calls, not 50 other calls.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that to me is, that's something that we're learning about is LinkedIn gives you access to a lot of people. You know, Google searches give you access to a lot of people. Just a database gives you access to a lot of people, but it just, to me, it's not something that a salesperson does not want to call somebody and just interrupt them.
Yeah, there's so much noise and so much. I mentioned earlier the manifesto that I've written up for my company, and one part of it being removing the unnecessary non-marketing, and salespeople use our data as well, activities. So we handle all the data stuff. basically, and get the data imported where it goes and whatnot. But another big part is the targeting. You know, when we started the company out, we were basically enabling spam because you only had a limited amount of targeting. So it was just, hey, we can give people emails and they can email market and at scale. And wow, for every million emails they send, they get this many responses. Not in B2B, not millions, but you know, for every 10,000 emails they send, so let's just send more. But it's untargeted, so it's not as useful. But when you didn't have the information to know the industry, the company size, the geography, all that stuff, then you just send to everyone and you have this giant net fishing, just, you know, clear cutting type of strategy. And so part of our manifesto now is to, you know, since I took the company over, to really change from enabling that type of activity. And that was really only the first couple of years when there wasn't a depth of information, to saying, you know, the more information we can provide, the better targeted it can be. We are not only in the business of helping marketers reach out to people, but also not reach out to the wrong people, because there is a damage done outside of, you know, not getting blocked as spam and that kind of stuff. That kind of stuff gets created because of the friction that marketers create when you market. It's, you know, the thing that you're doing is actually changing what you're doing. And I always say that marketers ruin everything they touch, because as soon as they find a fishing, a pond, they can fish and they can fish successfully. They fish it until there's no more fish as fast as they can. And sometimes they will poison the pond just so their competitors can't fish there. So marketers, like, the tactics, if you let them, that marketers will use are frequently not good. So it, as a data company, we want to try to enable an ethical marketing where you're saying, yes, you want to reach out to your audience, but the more we can target it, things like intent data, target it only at the time and place when they're actually more likely to be interested. So instead of sending out 10,000 emails in a day, you're sending out 1,000. Now you've only have 10% the friction that you're creating from your marketing activities. So basically reducing that marketing friction you have on your audience by being more targeted, having more information on them is important.
Yeah. I think that communication is, it seems to me to be one of two ways that I see communication happening in thinking about sales. One is, I'm going to give you some information. I'm going to educate you. I'm going to share with you resources. And that's, you know, that's a, I'm going to share something with you that you might find valuable. And then the second is, I'm looking to see if you want to have a conversation.
Right. I guess you'd say one's passive kind of, and the other's not, or one is saying, are you interested? And the other is just starting into the pitch and saying, if they're interested, they'll stay with me.
Well, here's my book, giving it freely. No obligation. It's yours. And I, maybe you'll find some value in it, period. I'll send you more information. At any time, you can tell me you don't want it anymore. No big deal. But I believe that here's some things that might help you, period. Now, that's one kind of information, one kind of communication. And the other kind is, I'm looking to find out if you want to have a conversation about anything.
Right. I mean, are you saying one of them is, because I know there's companies out there that their sole, you get something like 1-800-DENTIST, and their whole thing is, hey, we can market this audience, and then we will collect all the responses and then sell those off to anybody who wants this feed of leads, basically. So they're going out and doing that, asking, is there anything you're interested in? And people say, yeah, I'm interested in this. And then they find the person, they're like a matchmaker for that. They find 100 people who want that and sell the information to all of them. So now this one guy starts getting beat up by 100 people, but maybe they sell it to one, or they sell it to two.
But you're thinking of a big marketplace, and I'm thinking about just a seller. I mean, you're looking for people who want to have the conversation. I had on my show the other day, I had a fellow who has started a company, been doing it for 3 years, got some seed investors. And what he does is his niche is medical malpractice suits. And what he's done with AI is he's gone out to all the attorneys who do medical malpractice. Now, there's some people who are very good at winning and some people who are not so good, right?
Right.
So he has identified the people who are the best at winning. And then he can turn to the medical market, the people who have experienced, an unfortunate medical experience, have an unfortunate medical experience, who are looking for a malpractice attorney. All right. Now, up until now, what did they get to use? I'm Sam and Joe, and we will get you millions of dollars. Just call here.
Right. And so they're vetting them a bit kind of for you. I mean, they're adding a little bit of service on top.
Vetting
of
very, very heavily. They're curating. Mm-hmm. These are the best. And even segmenting them according to what area of malpractice they can use. Then when somebody comes to their website and says, this is what I'm looking for, they're looking to get very specific about what's the issue. And right. Then they provide that lead to the specific attorney.
They're like a value-added reseller of medical malpractice. Almost. They're not doing it themselves, but they know the best people for the best situations.
Yes.
And
yes.
Who to pass off to. And,
yes. Yes.
And whatnot.
Yeah. And in doing so, I believe they are increasing, they're improving the quality of this medical malpractice legal service.
Yeah, I'd say they're adding a value in the middle there. As long as the mm-hmm. marketplace there creative stays honest, then it isn't whichever lawyers pay them the most, get the most referrals kind of, because systems tend to cheat that way.
If they do, then they've just gone to the bottom of the...
Right. Then they're kind of undermining the value of their own service. And there are plenty of services out there. You know, 1-800, almost anything you see a TV commercial for these days is a broker. And
yes.
They're not always brokering based on the best fit for you, but they're brokering on who's the highest bidder for your
interest. That's right. And that's where you wind up with 15 people calling you over the next 3 months. Oh, you're interested in car insurance. So let me talk to you about it. No.
Oh, yeah. Huge money in the data industry for things like refinance. So mm-hmm. many companies out there that all they do is look for you to give a signal you're interested in refinancing, and then they sell it to everybody. We got a business loan one time, and apparently we got it from the wrong people or somebody within the industry, actually. I know there was a salesperson we were working with initially in this place we got the loan from that left that company, took the information to a new company. And so apparently that information is so valuable that sometimes people within a company will sell the information out to other companies just personally in order to make money off of it. Then we started getting all these calls from all these loan companies, and we're getting calls from the original person we talked to at a new company now saying, oh yeah, we have your info still. We can just rerun if you want to get the loan from us. Probably not legal. Not worth really digging into for us, but yeah, that kind of information, there's such a value on it that you get weird black market stuff going on. You get whole businesses, legitimate yeah. businesses created to help turn basic information into leads that the salespeople want. Basically, they're a marketing agency serving somebody that wants this information.
Yeah. And what I really believe is that what salesmen really want is they want people who want to have a conversation. Unfortunately, they're getting people who maybe moved a pinky finger and, you know, they were looking for something, but they don't really want to talk about buying right now. So that's the real piece.
Yeah. You'd like a hot lead. I remember when managing the sales team, we would, we needed people to call on for the sales reps. So the first thing is just saying, here's target contacts. Mm-hmm. You need to make some calls. Here's 100 target contacts a day. You can call through them to look to see if there's interest, just a basic targeted cold call, right industry, right type of contact. And then from there on, it was, okay, now we're running campaigns. Maybe you get some warm leads in where people are saying, specifically asking about the products you offer, something like that, because you're running lead generation marketing campaigns. But then you're also running kind of intent campaigns where you're running a campaign promoting a white paper or a blog article on a specific topic related to what you do. And people who open and click that email, at some point you're going to say, I'm not going to give my salespeople random targeted contacts. I'm going to take those random targeted contacts now. And let's say we've got 1,000 of them to give out to the sales reps this week. And I'm going to give, you know, take those and sort them by who opened the email for this white paper on our product that we sent out. Now, who actually clicked through to download the white paper? So the, I'm going to have them call the click-throughs first and then the opens. And the last people I'm going to have them call are the people who, you know, the email got delivered, but there was no other activity that was measured. And I will not have them call at all the people who said, you know, the email came back and said, this isn't a good email address.
Right.
Just that kind of filtering. That's kind of a, you know, intent data before intent data internally, where you're saying, I'm going to take our email campaigns and use that as intent information to give my sales reps a more intelligent cold call list. I guess you'd say, where at least you've warmed them up a little bit too. And you're not giving them people that are known to not be at the company anymore because you have been sending campaigns to them and they've been bouncing.
Well, check this. For me, what I did was a couple of months ago, feeling like the walls were closing in, right? And I said, well, you know, I don't feel like I've got anybody new to talk to right now. I can't walk out and trip over people's feet in a networking meeting. Right. So what can, and I was really kind of frustrated. I reflected on it and then I realized, oh, I have 11,000 people connected with me on LinkedIn. And then the second thing I realized was every one of those people either said, I want to have a conversation with you by connecting, or I said to them, I want to have a conversation with you by connecting, and they accepted it. Wow. So what I did was I went back for the last 90 days and I looked at I looked at the people who had sent me a message in the last 90 days, and I responded to them over several weeks. And I say, Sam, you know, I'm a little behind on my LinkedIn responses. A conversation would be awesome. Would you like to get on a Zoom meeting to either catch up, or if I'd known them, or to get to know each other better? If you want to, you can pick a day and time at calendly.com/Will Crist. What do you think happened?
Yeah, I mean, I would imagine you got some responses. These are people who'd already connected with you. A lot of people do that, but cold. There's programs out there where you can program in, here's my search criteria on LinkedIn. Send these people an invite to connect. And then if they make the mistake of connecting with me, start hammering them with this series of messages.
Yeah, but all right. So what happened to me is, I had five people within two days. I had five people. Today I had 10 people, and it's, there's people who just want to talk.
Oh, there is. Now you say that like it's a good thing, but that can be a danger these days too, because some people really do. I mean, I've been on calls with people. I'm like, hey, I can talk longer. I don't have another call, and I'm not around many people these days. It's like going to an old folks home and they just don't want you to leave because there's somebody to talk to. Stay. We're going to lock you up in the basement. Sometimes you can't get off calls anymore.
I haven't found that to be true. Well, I have not found that experience. What I have found is that when I look on LinkedIn, they have looked at my profile before they get on the call. And they have something relevant to talk about. Now, some of them, you know, some of them immediately start pitching me. Some of them want to know something about who I am. But it's been an interesting experience because I'm actually having conversations with people.
What I was saying was extreme hyperbole. I don't want anybody to think I actually believe that. But it is a slightly different atmosphere on the phone these days. Some people are more eager to, sure, jump on a call. Why not?
Right.
Yeah, the social media is a great place, especially now. That's where people can mix it up. I've also noticed networking communities have exploded. I'm in a couple business networks, and I get hit up now by new ones every day. And I will look into them frequently and find out they only have 2 members. And they're just looking to start a business network because they're like, everybody's jumping in these business networks now. And if they can start one and charge $99 a month, you know, they can make some serious coin. And people make up the network, but you know, some of them have real value and some don't, and it takes time to dig in and find out. But those have exploded quite a bit now because you can't meet in person. Now, the ones that were around before were around and actually meeting in person, usually with like local chapters and whatnot. And again, some are very valuable and some are kind of a waste of time. You got to just feel them out.
Right. Right. Well, it's amazing. It's amazing what we have learned in the last year, isn't it?
Yeah. It's like you said at the very beginning, the fish want a drink of water thing. I think I don't know if that was on the recording or not, but I'd referenced the movie Soul, and there's a comment in there about the one fish asking another fish where the ocean is, and says, "You're in the ocean." He says, "No, I'm in water. Where's the ocean? I want the ocean." The water we're living in has changed quite a bit, and it'll be interesting.
Yes, it has.
What happens when we get back into the ocean and say, "Oh, holy cow! How long will it take us to take advantage of being able to be in person?" no longer realize how great it is to be able to interact in person once we're able to again.
You mean I have to put on a shirt and a tie?
Yeah. Yeah. Some people are like, this was my ideal life. Come on.
That's right. Yeah. Well, this has been great, Sky. This has been a wonderful conversation. So what would you like to say to folks about what you're doing?
About what we do over at, Mountaintop Data with the Data. Let me first address the podcast I host, the If You Market podcast. I'd say, hey, if you're in marketing or a small business owner, check us out. We have some excellent guests on talking about all different aspects of marketing. I think most people probably don't listen to every episode, and you got to hear me every time, but picking and choosing, saying, oh, here's a topic I want to hear about, is a great way to listen, I think, to that kind of podcast. And then if you need to fill in time sometimes, you can listen to all of them, of course. So I'd urge people to check out that If You Market podcast. When it comes to data, that's what we do. That's what we do as a company. That's our purpose is data. It's a reoccurring theme on our podcast now because it's a personal, I don't know if I call it a vendetta, a personal problem I have with the marketing industry, this whole why marketing, where everybody is now told they're supposed to have, or purpose marketing, it's sometimes called, that their company needs to have a purpose, and their purpose is not their customers or their product or anything. Their purpose has to be some charity or something like that. Mm. Most of the time it's total BS.
Mm.
Our company manifesto is our purpose is our industry and improving our product and improving the experience for our customers. We will occasionally do charity things, but most of the time we don't even talk about it. It'll go unheard because we're doing it for the charity thing, not for here's the cornerstone of our brand is mm-hmm. that we, how much we love you or something when it has nothing to do with our product. So don't know where I started. Every time I start talking about that, I end up rambling forever on it because I feel very passionately about that topic and about marketers abusing their audience.
Yeah.
Fooling their audience with those kinds of techniques. And then also there are some legitimate companies out there that really care about certain things that maybe aren't their product. And then it cheapens what they're doing as well. So our we're a data company. That is our purpose. That's what we do. If anybody's interested in anything, business contact information, appending, cleaning, new contacts, all that kind of stuff, I'd say check us out. If I can, I'd also direct people to our online product, Top Data Search.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah. Go there. Get a free account. Put in the, put in the promo code 405, 405 1000. We'll give you 1000 free record downloads.
Excellent.
That's a lot of numbers. 405-1000. Hey, people can figure it out.
There you go. Excellent. Sky, it's been great having you on because this is just another example of how businesses in California thrive.
You've been listening to The Pilgrim on the 405 with Will Crist. To hear more of the programs in this podcast, go to www.willcrist.com.